This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh boy, this is going to be fun. I have two authors and they both like mythology. So this is it's going to be really great. At the bottom of the hour, my guest is Renee West, and she's written a book called Death by Chaos. And it's about it's about goddesses. And it's very, very, it's a fascinating book, and I'm really excited to talk to her. But right now I get to turn to really an old friend of Joy on Paper, because he's been on before, and I love his writing. I love his books. And it's so really wonderful to welcome Neil Litherland back to Joy on Paper. Hi, Neil.
Hey there, Patsy. How you doing?
Okay. Well, it is great. I'm so happy to have you back here because, as you know, I love your writing. And it's of course, the new book is called, The Soldier One.
Old Soldiers.
Old Soldiers, the Soldier One. Because it was funny, when I first, invited you, I was thinking, it's going to be another cat. I love your cat books. I'm telling you, they are so good. It is so funny. Ever since I read the first one, and I've looked at cats in a different way, because I was never a cat person. I sort of never thought too much about cats. Never cared that much about cats, other than I always thought they were like too dangerous for me to have in the house, because they would, with all the books I have, I thought, I don't know if you can train them. And so I was a little bit worried always to have a cat, and I never really thought of it, how does a cat think about things? But those books are so wonderful, and we'll talk about those in a minute, but let's talk about the new book. The new book, Old Soldier. I love mythology, and I know that you've actually, I think the idea for the new book must have come quite a while back, because didn't you write a short story that...
I did, yes.
A long time ago, right?
Many, many years ago at this point. I think I mentioned it as something I had done a while ago the first time you had me on.
Exactly. And I looked it up, and it's so fascinating, because now, I don't know if it was you always had this love for mythology, because now you've taken it to a completely new level. I mean, you've really written a fascinating book here. Old Soldiers is... it's a story that you've taken Greek mythology and some of the characters that we think we know and that we enjoy reading about, and done a really great job of bringing this into what century? I don't know.
Somewhere in the future.
Somewhere in the future. And it's possible. It's possible. So tell us about this, because first I want to also say it was very nice. I saw that you dedicated to your father.
Yeah, that was kind of actually a last minute addition. I had not dedicated any of my books to anyone who was still with us, except obviously for my sensitivity reader, my cat Jaeger.
Yeah. Oh, well, you better.
But yes, I finally got to the point where I was like, well, I've already dedicated something to everyone who has passed. Time to move on to everybody else now.
That's right. Well, and this is a perfect book for him. I think I'm sure it's really appreciated. So tell us the premise for the Old Soldiers, because you've taken characters that we think we know, and you've added some very interesting and intriguing insights into them and into what in the world is going to happen in the future.
All right. Well, it's a thing that you'll see a lot with sci-fi set in the future, particularly military sci-fi, is it's usually focused on the big conflict, whether it's... Heinlein stories, particularly things like Starship Troopers, we're always in the midst of the expansion, in the midst of the conflict, whatever's going on. What makes this one different from that perspective is the conflict has been over for a good 10 years or so. It's humanity's first interstellar, interspecies conflict. Of the Hyperion was fought, and it nearly destroyed the world, nearly wiped out humanity, but we managed to survive. but we kind of had to pull out every doomsday weapon we could think of, and we still barely won. And so it's a world that's sort of trying to move on from this really horrendous event where literally the entire world had to come together to just for mutual survival. But it's one of the things they just didn't plan for. Of they created the Myrmidon, which are, yeah, for, you know, the Greek mythology reference of they were ants that I believe it was Zeus turned into soldiers. It might have been one of the other gods. But they were Achilles' personal troops, if I'm remembering correctly. And so it was one of those, you know, bigger, faster, stronger, tougher, all of that. And no one really expected them to survive the conflict, and no one really thought what to do with them afterwards. It just wasn't an idea. And so we sort of open our story looking at some of the veterans of this conflict who are living in a world that was not meant for them, even though they're the ones who fought for it, and arguably are one of the big reasons that the world continues to exist. So that's kind of the not-so-subtle metaphor that I worked into this story.
Well, tell people, for people who don't know, tell us a little bit about Pollux, and tell us about the main characters.
Our protagonist is a retired Major Pollux. No one has last names because they were created in a lab and raised by scientists, so no one really has a surname. But Pollux is kind of grappling with his return to being a civilian, in addition to being, yeah, a 9-foot-tall albino half-alien super soldier. He's just trying to deal with, you know, his entire life he's been trained to fight, to command, to protect people, and now he's trying to come back to a world where that's not necessary, that's not the person they need him to be, and he's just grappling with all of the, you know, all of the stresses, all of the traumas of not just that conflict, but of losing so many of his troops, both to the enemy and to suicide and to riots. And he's having a really hard time just hanging on. And there's only two of his old squad left who, it's ambiguous whether or not the Myrmidon are technically related by having the same parent, but all of them went through the same process. So it's one of those very binding situations. So it's him, Castor, and Helen are his two former squad mates. And the two of them have managed to adjust better to civilian life than he has. You know, they have jobs and they're making their own lives, and he's mostly just going to therapy, trying to form relationships, trying to stay on top of everything he's doing, and things are going well on that front until dun-dun-dun begins.
Exactly. And, you know, something, a book like this really takes a lot of sort of deep thinking about what are the possibilities. You've brought in some aspects. You know, nowadays, of course, we have these bots that they are creating for everything. And it is a whole new world when we're looking at it. You know, when we think about, they really are using bots in different military aspects now. And who knows what they'll create.
Yes.
You know, it's all of that stuff that we thought was sci-fi, you know, 30 years ago. It's happening. So what was your research when you were looking into it? What did you do, some really in-depth research on robotics and the future of robotics?
I did some. It was an interesting thing. As you mentioned, I wrote two short stories kind of fleshing out the world, and the one you were referring to, Heart of the Myrmidon, was actually, if anyone wants to try and track it down, it basically takes place 2 to 3 months before the novel, is like the rough timeline. But as far as like the world went, it was mostly the questions of writing out what doomsday weapons essentially had been used, what effects those had had on the planet, and then just following the ripples of what they had done. One of them, it's mentioned in passing in the book, of it was a device called Erebus. It was essentially a energy absorbent warhead, for lack of a better term, that filled the atmosphere around the planet, because the aliens they were fighting were an energy-based life form, and they needed to absorb radiation in order to continue the fight. So by blocking the sun, it sort of shut down one of their major power sources. The problem is they were so focused on getting it up there, they didn't ask how they were going to get it down. And so that's why there's practically no scenes of sunlight. It's always raining. Everything's gray and just polluted because it's working its way out of the atmosphere, but it's been 10 years and it's still there. It's the reason most people live underground, have air purification systems.
And wear masks. Masked again. People wearing masks. Like we're not going to get away from it.
Future.
Wow.
But it was just trying to figure out like what things were done and what technological solutions would be used either in little ways, like there's an underground forest for providing clean air and filtration.
Yeah, the jungle.
Technology, we just planted trees. That was all they could think to do, and it seems to be working pretty well.
Well, I thought it's very clever, and there are many sort of, you know, there are a lot of books, you know, with robots and things, but I thought it was very clever. I thought the way you explained it, the characters that you have in the story, of course, with any book, the important thing is that you had to really make us care about the main characters. So when we have, you know, Pollux, and we get to know him and we care about him, that's part of, you know, that's a great accomplishment.
It was a particularly, well, I won't say difficult, but it was one of my goals when I sat down and I had created this character. Because I had, I think it was a blog entry I wrote a little while ago. If anyone's seen the Kurt Russell film Soldier, that was a large inspiration for sort of what I wanted to convey to the reader. It's a great film for anyone who hasn't seen it. But it was that idea of how do you take this very physically powerful, very, very dangerous as far as his skill set character goes, and make him very vulnerable, make him out of his element, so that even though the audience has that moment of, they know if something goes wrong in his head, it could result in heinous devastation, because there's just so much muscle memory about what's supposed to happen when the adrenaline kicks in, but we don't want to see that. But we're always kind of worried, even though we hope that's not what happens. So it was a difficult tension to sort of keep.
Well, all of them, Helen and Castor, you brought them to life. I thought it was probably of all the mythology books I've read, you know, I thought you developed them as real characters. I really enjoyed it.
I'm glad that at least somebody's reading it.
Well, okay, this is, of course, the problem. You know, you're an indie writer, and
yeah,
and so it's as if things weren't difficult enough for indie writers. Now we have this horrible pandemic-y thing, so you really can't get out there and do anything.
Yeah, it has been a trial. I will say that.
Because, you know, marketing, I'm sure if you know, before this, that there were opportunities, book fairs, book shows, book events, different types of, you know, there are all sorts of conventions where people are interested in, you know, robotics. And there would have been so many opportunities of places for you to go and promote your book. And now you're sort of stuck with Zoom, which isn't the best thing.
It definitely is not. I applaud people who tried to do digital conventions. I'm glad they put in the effort, but they're not the same.
No.
As like people trying to get stuff goes.
No, they're not the same at all. And I mean, I don't know how much marketing you used to do for your other books, but I think particularly this book has so many possibilities for, there are so many conventions where people, you know, like to dress up as robots or like are interested in robots. And I mean, there are so many places where you could be marketing this.
There are several smaller sci-fi cons in the Chicagoland area I'm hoping to get back to, because I sort of wanted this book to play to the two major audiences that I have seen develop in sci-fi and fantasy over, like, my, I was about to say short term, but I've been going for like 15 years now. But there's the older audience, you know, your Heinlein, your 50s and 60s sci-fi, who they want, you know, the hard military sci-fi. They want, you know, characters with that very straight-laced background. And then you have the younger generation, who's, you know, they want character-driven stories. They want emotional development. They want, you know, they want to see adversity overcome and all of that. And my hope is that if I can get both of these groups together, both of them will have nice things to say about my book.
Exactly, because you've checked both boxes. You've created really characters that people will care about, and at the same time, you have all the military and all the hard, you know, hard stuff that people enjoy. So when I was reading, I was thinking, it is sad that you can't, you know, these things just are not opening up in a big way. I mean, these conventions, you know, attract thousands and thousands of people and opening up an opportunity for you. So I know it's going to be very difficult. I don't know. Look, I've always felt that you should have been picked up by an agent. I don't know how hard you tried, but your writing is so top level. It is so very, very good. And that is one of the advantages of having an agent and having, you know, being published by a major publisher, is that they do open doors for you. But I'm telling you, I don't see... Your writing is so much better than so many of the agent books I get. Sometimes it makes me crazy. I wish I had more influence. I wish I could, you know, had a show on, you know, 5 days a week, 3 hours a day, so that I could get through to people and say, look, give an indie writer a chance, because somebody who has written a really good book like this, somebody who really, you're talented. You're amazing, actually, because we can talk just about your ability to write. But Old Soldiers is a really, really good book. Well written, reads beautifully. I get frustrated about it.
There was actually Eric Flint's Ring of Fire is of course the company who both picked that one up and who published, you know, Leo's novels, my cat books for those who are not familiar with them. But it was a very similar thing that Walt, one of my editors, said to me. This is a trunk book. Yeah, it's been sitting there for, you know, 2-3 years. Nobody wanted it. So I can't believe this is a trunk book. Nice of you to say, and I'm glad you took it out of my trunk so that I don't have to worry about it anymore.
Yeah, somehow, I just wish, if I won the lottery, I'm going to tell you right now, if I won the lottery, the first book I would take, because I think it would make such an absolutely wonderful, wonderful film, I would take Marked Territory. This is your cat book. So if I won the lottery, I would option...
I have a head casting for everyone I want.
I would option that book. I would option that book in a minute, because it would make... Well, we don't have much time, but I want to tell people, this is a... Just to mention, Marked Territory, and it's a noir, the noir stories, and told from the point of view of a cat... I know cats in general, but a particular cat. And just tell us quickly about that.
Absolutely. So Marked Territory, the first in what I'm at least in my head calling my cat noir series, follows Leo, our big Maine Coon bruiser, who lives out in an alley in northern New York. And he is constantly just trying to, like, keep to his own business, stay out of other people's problems, and stuff just winds up on his doorstep. And once the cat's gotten curious, he can't just leave it alone.
He can't. And he is so good. And the books, anybody, if you love cats, you will love these books, because they're completely different. I mean, everybody, you know, in Cozy Mysteries, everybody always has a cat. But these are really... really, it changes your attitude about cats in general and about also looking at things, because you are very, well, you're very clever. You're very sensitive. You're a sensitive writer. And I just love Leo's point of view. So if you just keep your fingers crossed, if I win the lottery, I'm going to option. That's the first one I'm going to option. And then I'll option Old Soldiers, because I think that would be a great film, too. You are just so talented. And I will do everything I can to try to help you get noticed, because you really deserve it. This is one of the things, you know, Neil, I've been doing this program now for 6 years. And I, you know, of course, I get all the big names, global best-selling authors. And, you know, just last week, Tuesday, I had Karen Slaughter. My goodness, and she sold, you know, so many millions of books. But I love when I find an indie author who is just talented and deserves recognition. So I hope all of you people, sometimes people are like, oh, well, it's an indie author. It's an indie author who's really talented. I mean, really, really talented and deserves to be read. And that's you, Neil. You are really, really great. And it's Neil Litherland. And I don't know where do you want people to look for you, but they can search for you, I know, on Amazon. And your books are there.
I believe I'm on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can find the latest three ones, both Marked Territory, Painted Cats, and Old Soldiers, should be on Bayon. They're digital buying if people are looking there.
Well, really, both of these books are really, really good. Well, all of them, but I, as a matter of fact, I go back all the way back to Cryer's Knife, which I love. You're an excellent writer and really smart writer. And I hope that you can get some traction, and hopefully we'll get over this horrible thing, and you can start getting back to conventions and really build your fan base, because you deserve to be recognized.
And then hopefully I can come out with some new stuff and you can have me on again.
Absolutely. I will love to have you back. As a matter of fact, maybe sometime in September, I want to do a program mostly about writing. And there's nobody better than you. And we'll talk about, you have a lot of things to say about writing. Okay?
Sure thing. Just let me know when.
Okay. Thank you very much. Neil Litherland, the new book is called Old Soldiers. It is fantastic. And then go and get one of his cat books. Start with Marked Territory. You'll love Leo. You'll look at cats differently after you read that. Bye-bye, Neil. Thanks so much for being on Joy on Paper today.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Okay. Talking about good writing. This is part of the whole thing of trying to encourage everybody to write their book and learn how to write. And so I have another literary gem here from Jim Lamb, who is a real, real friend of Joy on Paper.
Here's a headline. Hyperboles are the best, greatest, most wonderful, super-duper way to get a reader's attention. Short version, extravagant exaggeration stretches the truth to the breaking point, sometimes beyond. That's hyperbole, all right. Use it with deliberate purpose and obvious intent for emphasis, dramatic effect, or humor. I'm Jim Lamb. Let's get started. Years ago, when my son was young, he asked, "Dad, what does the word hyperbole mean?" I stopped what I was doing, turned to him and yelled, "If I've told you once, I've told you a million times, don't bother me when I'm writing." He looked at me stunned, jaw dropped, eyes wide open. Then I smiled and said, "That, my boy, is hyperbole." Here's an example from the opening of Babe the Blue Ox. One winter, it was so cold that all the geese flew backward and all the fish moved south. And even the snow turned blue. Late at night, it got so frigid that all spoken words froze solid before they could be heard. People had to wait until sunup to find out what folks were talking about the night before. I love that, especially the part about the fish moving south. Why? Because I live in Florida and I like to fish. Hey, fish, come on down. Shakespeare knew how to use hyperbole better than most. Here's a sample from Macbeth. "All great Neptune's ocean washes blood clean from my hand." Wow, that's a lot of blood. a ton, a bunch, oodles, and even more water. Splish, splash. How about you? Have you heard these hyperboles? I'm so hungry I could eat a horse. I have a ton of homework. My sister has a million pair of shoes. I'm starving to death. He's older than dirt. She's got gobs of money. His brain is the size of a peanut. Her eyes are wide as saucers. You missed it by a mile. I can't do anything right. He's as dumb as a bag of rocks. She looks like $1 million. It's been ages since I've seen you. I can smell pizza a mile away. My dad knows everything about cars. She has a heart of gold. My mom's gonna kill me. These phrases grab attention, create an amusing effect, make a point. That's what hyperboles do. No surprise, then, that they show up in advertising. When I was a kid, there was a brand of gasoline to put a tiger in your tank. There was another tiger that pitched Frosted Flakes by saying, "They're great." Want more? Of course you do. On TV, there's a fluffy pink bunny that sells a battery brand that keeps going and going and going. An insurance company whose service is so easy a caveman can do it. A theme park that's the happiest place on earth. An energy drink that gives you wings. Excuse me. Hello. Hello, Southwest. Cancel my flight. I'm going to fly to Orlando myself and get happy. Speaking of getting happy, we've got to wrap this up. Why? Because I have a million things to do. A bottomless pit of things. So many, they could choke a horse. I'm Jim Lamb, and you've just learned a little something-something about hyperboles.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest. Whoa, this is going to be interesting. And the name of the book is Death by Chaos by Renee West. Hi, Renee.
Hi, how are you doing?
Okay, did I pronounce your name right? Because it's spelled in a different way than I've ever seen. So I wanted to make...
Yes, it is a very unique spelling, but it's a fun spelling.
It is.
You did pronounce it correctly.
Well, you know, my name is Patsy with a Z, which is also a very fun spelling. Mm-hmm. And so Renee with a double I at the end, I thought, okay, that's interesting. Did you do that or did your parents do that to you?
I did that.
You did it. Okay. Well, it's good. It's easy to search. We just have to come up with a wonderful way to remember the double I.
You know, I thought about that after I had sort of created that spelling. I thought, yes, it does make it unique, and it does, because there are other Renee West out there. But then it dawned on me, oh, darn, people might be looking for the other Renee West spelling, but I can cope.
You can cope. You can get over it. Okay. Well, where do I start? You know, this is, it turned out to be a fun day because I was just talking to Neil Litherland, another indie author, and you're an indie author.
Yes.
And as a matter of fact, you just were selected by the Indie Readers for the Discovery Award.
Yes, that was exciting.
Well, that was very exciting. You know, I when I got your book, okay, you know, I get so many books. I get lots and lots of books. And so I was, you know, waited until I had some time. It's not a very thick book. And I picked it up and I started reading it and I thought, oh my goodness, this is one fine writer.
Oh, thank you.
And that's what I really love. It's sometimes it's, for me, this program is sometimes like a mystery tour because I know, you know, I'm going to get a lot of books and some of them are going to be absolutely great and some of them are going to be written by very, very famous authors. And I'm so thrilled always when I get them and I get to know the authors. And in many cases now, I've met them and made friends with them. And I never know, you know, if a book is going to be really something that I want to promote. Because I do not promote books that I don't like. And even if an author's famous, I just sort of skip it. I don't have time. I have, you know, other things to do. Because I just like good writing. And when I was reading this, I thought, this is one good writer. Now, there's many reasons I liked it. Well, the Bobby Kennedy mention, the Native American with the green eyes, just all sorts of little things throughout the book, scattered throughout the book that really I enjoyed so much. So I'll let you set the story because it is about, and I'll tell you another thing, and this is funny. I have to explain this, and my listeners know. Every April, or around April, I start getting books about four women. I mean, I get so many four women books, one after another, and they're all called beach reads. And they all have four women, occasionally five, but generally four women. And they are all, actually, so many of them are so much the same that I get confused which book I'm reading. And, you know, I select the best ones because there's a limit, you know? There's a limit. But then when I got this one, this is four different type of women. These are goddesses. And goddesses, I mean, well, you explain how you came out with this idea of the four goddesses.
Yeah. Well, I have always had a passion, I think since seventh grade, for Greek mythology. And one of my favorite myths is the Apple of Discord, it's also known the Judgment of Paris. And that's when the three main goddesses, Hera, Athena, Aphrodite, were all vying over this beautiful golden apple inscribed to the fairest. It had been tossed into a wedding by another goddess named Eris, who was a little upset and insulted that she was not invited to the wedding. But there was good reason why she was not invited. She was a troublemaker.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, Zeus, not being a fool, did not want to make the decision. You know, sometimes I heard one, a friend of mine who had many sisters, and they would ask him, who looks the best? And he'd go, oh, I'm not getting in this, you know. And so Zeus selected a young boy named Paris to make the selection. And, of course, he picked Aphrodite, and, you know, that's where the Trojan War got started because Aphrodite awarded him with the Helen of Troy. But anyway, I've always sort of noticed the one frustrating thing about Greek mythology was how, while the goddesses were interesting and incredible, they were always adversaries. You didn't really see sisterhood. And I thought it'd be fun to create a story about four modern goddesses. Each one of the four ladies, one sort of represents the Hera, one represents, you know, Aphrodite and Athena, and there's even one that represents an Eris. And I wanted them to be supportive and to develop a friendship and work together. And I wanted to create a situation where they could bring their individual strengths to a situation and make things work. And so that's how I sort of got that the idea. And I was thinking, where would these women come across each other? And I've always been fascinated by, you know, places where people are randomly thrown together, and yet they find they have a lot in common, or they find they have a great connection. And college is usually a good place to do that. So these four women, who are very distinct, very different, have different aspirations, come from different backgrounds, are thrown together as roommates. They're just randomly thrown together as roommates their freshman year. And they become a very tight-knit group. And so then, of course, I also love mysteries, or I also love conflict and the resolution of a conflict and people going through the steps. I remember I used the example of Silence of the Lambs when I read that. I loved going through the process with Clarice and how she solved the mystery, or how she helped, you know, capture the bad guy. But anyway, so that's basically how I came across or helped develop this story.
Well, and then you ran with it.
And then I ran with it, yeah.
And tell us the period that it's set in.
It starts off in, I don't remember my math, in the 68. Their freshman year, 1969. They graduate in 1973. So they are part of that, what is known as the second wave of feminism, which was, you know, sort of led by Betty Friedan and other icons such as, you know, Gloria Steinem. And so they are experiencing college when there's a lot of change in the culture, especially for young women. You know, they are having new opportunities thrown at them. And changes on how women, you know, what is considered a good girl, what is considered acceptable. A lot of changes going on, and they're embracing them. They're embracing the changes. And it also takes place in Southern California, where I think there was also, I grew up in Southern California, and so there was a lot of what I call the summer of love, and the idea of, you know, embracing each other, and the idea of redefining what is beautiful. And so it was an exciting period.
It was,
I wanted these women to experience and to showcase it in the story.
Well, I think you did, and now, you know, as I said, this is a book where it's hard to say where it fits in exactly, because it is a very short book. I liked it in a way. I said, okay, you know, she said what she had to say and she did it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I like that, because sometimes, oh my goodness, I cannot tell you how many books I get where, oh, I wish an author would have liked this. And I did it. I said it. I don't have to go to 432 pages. Mm-hmm. 310 would have been, you know, just right. In your case, of course, the book is in the business, it's considered really short. What was your decision to do that?
Well, I think I'm like with you. I like details, but I don't want somebody going on and on, which is sort of ironic because I tend to, when I speak, go on and on. So I think I was very careful not to write that way. I wanted it to be fast paced. I realized I was not trying to write, you know, War and Peace or anything. I wanted this to be a fun read. I mean, even though there are some mysterious qualities, there is a death, I still wanted this to be a fun read that somebody could sit down and maybe get in, enjoy in one sitting, or actually enjoy reading on the beach. And I also find sometimes when I watch a movie or read a book, when there's too many details, to remember. And especially since Tasha was going to be collecting all the evidence and discovering the truth about everything, I wanted to, you know, the reader to not forget what she had discovered or to become confused. I found it frustrating occasionally if the murderer is revealed and I'm going, who was that? Were they even in the house?
The word that came to mind when I read your book, and I read it, and it was funny. I picked it up, and I thought, well, you know, this is a slight book. That word came to mind, and I thought, well, you know, for me, you know, for sitting down, I'm going to read this in no time. And I did. And at the end, I thought, wow, refreshing. I mean, this was refreshing. Exactly that. It moves. You say everything you want to say, and you did it nicely. Really solid writing. And I appreciate solid writing.
Oh, thanks.
And I thought at the end, well, you know, I don't know, but perhaps you'll influence some. I don't want to complain because I love reading. You know, I love reading. But there has been a tendency in over the past few years, I've noticed, that many authors like just don't give it up. I mean, and they do repeat over and over the same stuff that they really don't need to do. If a book is worth, there are books that I want 400 pages, I want 800 pages. I wouldn't take out one single page. But there are so many books, well, which are basically mystery stories or action stories that really just drag on. And I thought, maybe Renee here with a double I is going to influence writers. And they'll say, you know, I don't have to be that long. Now, I think you, perhaps from the industry point of view, they don't know where to place you because it doesn't fit. You know, they have a format. They say it has to be so many pages to be, you know, this and this. Did you try to find an agent for this book, or did you just decide to, what the heck, I'm going to publish it?
I went ahead and just published it for a variety of reasons. I did my research, and as I'm telling, because I now have, you know, you might understand this, but I, now that I've written a book, and especially since I've won an award, it's amazing how many friends or acquaintances have said, I've always wanted to write. You know, I'm thinking about writing, and of course I encourage them. And I will tell them that the indie industry has really developed. I said, I don't think there's the stigma attached to an independently published novel that there used to be. And I've also thought, as you know, if by reading my book, I like modern music.
Oh.
And I've been intrigued by artists who could not get a record deal, but who would go in, pay the studio time, put out the music, and then go play at a club, and then sell the CDs from the trunk of their car. And I really kind of admired that entrepreneurship and that, you know, not giving up. And so I decided to go ahead and do an indie publication because from what I read, it was the quickest way to get it out there.
Well, you know, you're right. And there is no stigma anymore to being an indie writer.
Yes.
The only problem is that, and now, like, particularly in the pandemic, you have, your marketing is so much more difficult. It's just, you can't do anything about it, and particularly now. But, you know, when you're such a fine writer, I actually feel, I mean, of course, if you would have found an agent, if you would have sent this to an agent, they would have immediately said, make it longer. They would never publish it. No agent would have taken this book at this length. They would have come back to you and they said, okay, well, let's flesh this out. Let's flesh that out. Let's flesh this out. And it would have been at least 65 pages minimum. Because they were not going to publish it at this, you know, a major publisher won't publish such a slight book. I don't think they would have published it. They would have wanted you to make it bigger because they sort of have a price range that they set and they want to make sure that people get the number of pages to get the value, you know. But your writing is so excellent. It's really so excellent. And I had on earlier on the program, I had another indie author, Neil Litherland. Neil Litherland is a great writer, absolutely fantastic. And he's an indie author. He's written many, many books now. And he's getting there. You know, he's working up his way up the ladder of success. And you definitely have this in you to do this. Because when somebody writes as well as you do, it is wonderful to see. And I hope that, you know, by promoting your book, that I can help you and that other people will reach out and read this book. Now, I will say one thing. And also, how can I say? There's profanity in the book. I have to tell this to my audience now, because what I've discovered is because we talk about it being a mystery, it's a beach book. There are people who just don't want the profanity, and I don't like excess profanity. But in your case, it's relevant, and it's the way the girls talk, and it makes it very realistic. It's not sort of superfluous profanity, you know, just for the heck of it kind of stuff. It creates. Sort of builds up their character or lack, you know, in the term of, you know, their personalities. But again, this is something, did you think about it when you wrote it?
Well, you know, in many ways, I like dialogue. I like dialogue in books. I like dialogue in movies. I think that's how you really learn about character. And yes, there are conversations in this book that are very similar and based on conversations I had. There were some even lines that either I had said at one point and I thought, well, I like that line, or somebody said to me that I thought, well, that's a good way of phrasing it. And yes, it was a bit saucy, but they're also, while these four ladies are connecting, there's also a little bit, especially in the beginning, getting to know each other, a little of puffing up their chests and trying to impress each other the first night and sort of challenging each other. So, and then they also then become very comfortable where anything goes, you know, anything out of their mouth, as you know, and they're very relaxed. They feel they can say whatever they want in front of each other. So, and that's how I was with my friends, and my friends were with me. So I think it just for sensationalism. And there are times when I have come across a line or a book or a movie or something in which I felt like, okay, you're just going for shock value.
Exactly.
I'm from the 60s. You can't do it.
I like that word saucy. Yes, I think so. There is. But the thing is, it's a very, very good read. And the storyline is excellent. The character development is terrific. You're a fine writer. I assume you're writing more right now?
Yes, I am.
Yes, once you start, you can't stop. I hope that you know, I think it was brave of you to do it. And I think maybe people will come to the book and say, yeah, you know, I like this way of writing. Say what you've got to say and tell the story. Give us some real, you know, give us a couple hours, depending on how fast you read, a couple hours of lots of fun and also memorable characters. And they are certainly memorable, these girls.
They are.
Oh, boy, you don't forget them once you read about them. Puts a sort of new look on dormitory life. Anyway, Renee, I think you're an excellent writer, and the name is Renee West, double I, Renee with double I at the end, and this book is called Death by Chaos. And where can people find you? You're on Facebook and wherever?
I'm on Facebook. I also have a Twitter account, and you can also buy the book on Amazon. It's available both soft cover and Kindle.
Okay. Well, people, I think this is a fun read. And again, this is my whole goal is to promote writing, as you say.
We appreciate
you know, people come to you and say they want to write. Well, I get this all the time, and I've had a lot of people during this pandemic time coming and say, we want to write, and this is what I want to encourage. And that's why I love having indie authors on Joy on Paper, so that I can help you to find an audience and sort of wake up people's minds and say, yeah, let's try this, because, you know, we want a terrific book, and this is a terrific book, a great read, and I think you've done a wonderful job, and I look forward to having you back for the next one. And again,
I look forward to being with you.
Again, Renee won the Indie Readers Discovery Award. And well-deserved, Renee.
Well, thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today.
And you have a good week.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye. Okay. Isn't this fun? You know, I had no idea I was going to have two authors, both loving Greek mythology. Actually, I wish I would have had more time with Renee, because Renee has lived all over the place, so many countries. Most of the countries that I have lived in. And so it was really interesting to read about that. Next time I'll have her on, I'll have more time so we can talk about all of the places she lived and traveled. But I do love the references in here, the sort of end of the 60s, beginning of the 70s culture. It will bring back a lot of fond memories to people. And she has some, she uses film references in the proper way. She blends them into the story, so they're part of the storyline. And it's not, too many times authors are just, you know, saying somebody looks like somebody in a film. But this, she's done a beautiful job. She's a good writer. My goodness, I don't know, you know, this is what's so fascinating. Somebody comes out with their first book, and it's so good. It's so good. You wonder, whoa, where have they been hiding all these years? Well, I think now that she's started, we're going to see more books from her. Anyway, because it's what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. And those... and it will be so wonderful to see your books in a film. You never know. And, of course, I'm hoping for Carol J. Perry, who has a book coming out in August. My goodness, oh, be my ghost. It is available for pre-order right now. Go ahead and pre-order it. And also Rita Moreau's book. I mean, this is getting exciting. I've got two wonderful local authors who are just making it big. Wow, this is fantastic. Rita Moreau's book is Murder on Honky Tonk Row, and you can also pre-order that. And she's going to be here. Carol's going to be here. Anyway, everybody, say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. And he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him. And everybody, have an absolutely wonderful and glorious weekend. And we're going to have beautiful weather here in glorious Clearwater, Florida. Bye-bye now.